Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Warning that I've had to put around about the moshing that's been going on. I've noticed that a bunch of you students have been into the moshing, and it's very dangerous, and I wish you would stop, particularly to take the time to listen to Deadly Cast, a podcast for sci-fi's Deadly Class. I'm Alex.
Oh, you think you're punk? I'll tell you, punk. You know, the most punk is Dumbledore.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And as mentioned, you're listening to Deadly Cast, a podcast about Harry Potter. So what did you guys think about the recent revelations that J.K. Rowling dropped out there about what's been going on with Grindelwald and Dumbledore? Justin, I'll turn to you first.
I saw it coming all along. You can't hide that level of passion.
Can we stay on topic, please?
We are on topic. This is a Harry Potter podcast.
Nope.
We're going to be talking about Harry Potter.
Nope.
Let's get into it.
Nope.
No? Now, should we talk about Deadly Class instead?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to be talking about the latest episodes of the show, Kids of the Black Hole. If you're listening to this in real time, apologies about the latest of the episode. We suck. But if not, if you're listening to this later on or going into season two or something like that, who even cares? Let's talk about it. I'll give you guys Who cares? Who cares about anything? That's the thing. This is a nihilistic show.
I care about a lot of things.
What is more punk rock than releasing a podcast almost a week late? You know what I'm talking about? Wow.
Exactly. You're basically a member of the Deadly Class.
Speaking of which,
you assassinated everyone's expectations about the release date.
Ooh. Oh, I like it. I like it. Speaking of which, this show takes place at a school for teen assassins called King's Dominion. There's a guy who runs the school named Master Lin. Master Lin has a secret family on the side. He's got a daughter. He's got a wife. Not allowed to have that stuff. And Madame Gao, who is the leader of the organization that runs King's Dominion, has found out about his secret family. So time is starting to run out for Master Lin as we head into this episode. Additionally, another thing that is going on with Master Lin is there's a guy named Diablo. Diablo is the father of Chico, the Mexican gang, I think, or South of the Border gang.
Yeah.
Something like that. And he is pretty upset because his son Chico was murdered on school grounds. He wants Master Lin to be cracking down on that a little bit harder. So that's another wall that's closing in on old Master Lin over there. Meanwhile, his students are not faring much better, specifically Marcus, who is our main character, our hero of the show, if you will, or add to hero. He is a disaffected youth whose parents were killed. I'm real cool.
Yeah. He's disaffected.
He ended up not exactly blowing up an orphanage, but he was blamed for blowing up an orphanage while trying to kill a guy named Fuckface, who likes to have sex with animals, among other things. Not a very nice guy. Fuckface got his face a little bit messed up when this happened, and Fuckface went along and killed 16 people, which, again, Marcus got blamed for. Fuckface wants that life. He's all about that life. He wants to be in King's Dominion. He wants to embarrass Marcus, but most of all, he wants to be on Phil Donahue's show.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. Pete gets that. Pete understands that. That's why Pete killed all those people just this past week, which is why the podcast was late. Very busy with murders.
Yeah.
And Fuckface has taken over the house of a guy named Shabnam, who is a student at the school. He has captured Shabam's parents. He has captured a bunch of other people. His hillbilly hick family has moved in. And he's also got Chico's head literally on ice hanging out in the house.
Yeah.
Last episode, Marcus revealed exactly what was going on to everybody else. And they've decided that they need to take the fight to Fuckface before Fuckface takes the fight to them. Those other students include two ladies in Marcus's life, specifically Maria, who he's dating, and Saya, who he kind of likes. Maybe I'm just going to throw it out there a little bit more. I'll just mention that.
That's the trick of a love triangle. It's what kind of triangle is it? Equilateral, right. Isosceles, the other kind.
Right triangle.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah.
But this right triangle is wrong because he hurts some feelings in this episode.
Oh, man.
That's on Deadly Cast, you go to class and you learn a little math and geometry. Other characters that are important to know about, there's Billy, who is a good friend of Marcus's. He's a punk rock dude in love with a girl named Petra. He was in another love triangle between Petra, Billy, and Lex. There's also another friend of Marcus's named Willie. Willie is a pacifist. He's also in a little bit of a relationship of his own with a comic geek who he's slowly falling in love with and opening up to. And what else? Who else do we need to know about going into this episode?
The racist cheerleader and Drago character.
Sure. Victor and Brenda, I believe, are the two characters.
They're bad guys.
Deborah, maybe? I don't know. Anyway, they're bad guys. They seem to have maybe turned on Master Lin and teamed up with Madame Gao, which pays off in this episode. So let's... Yes.
I don't think you brought up Sia. Saya.
I did. We had a whole thing, a very funny bit about triangles. Didn't you hear that? Weren't you listening?
You didn't get into her backstory. Other people got backstories.
Yeah, I mean, you know. She was in a movie with Noah Centineo on Netflix. That's the important thing that you need to know here.
It's a great movie.
Yeah, it is. How many times have you watched it now, Pete?
Shut up.
Well, we could talk about how Saya has a pretty intense, she's the sort of understudy or the favored student of the headmaster. And so he relies on her.
Also the most lethal assassin of all of them.
Well, that's now, subjective.
Normally, I recap the entire episode, or at least the bare bones of what happened here. There was a bunch of different, not random things, but it went in a lot of directions this episode. A lot of different things happened, but it mostly seems like set up for this final episode of the season more than anything. But the big things you need to know is everybody went to a punk rock club and went moshing. Marcus shat himself at a comic book store, and Fuckface kind of prepared for the final battle. And meanwhile, Master Lin suffered a great tragedy when, after trying to take down Madame Gao, it turns out that Drago and Brenda or Deborah, who even knows, I'll check in a second, as do not drive our frequent listeners crazy. They turned on Madame Gao. Master Lin tried to get after her. Madame Gao escaped. And through a variety of circumstances, his wife ended up dead, and he is now on the run with his daughter. So, again, that's the bare bones of the episode. But let's get into it. What jumped out to you guys? What did you think of the episode in total?
Well, I think I would like to talk about Willie first. Kind of get that out of the way.
Sure, that sounds great.
This shit was really heartbreaking to me because, his friends need him, and he does not. He says, fuck all this. I'm gonna get out of here, but I'm gonna run with my lady. I'm gonna go and see if she wants to go to California with me, which I thought was sweet. But I got real angry when, okay, fine, you're gonna leave everybody, even though. Even Saya is like, hey, man, after all Marcus did for you, and he kind of had a good point. He was like, yeah, he did some nice things for me, but he also, like, got me into this deeper than I wanted to be.
Well, he also said the first punch was for me, but then the rest of the killing the guy was for him. And I thought that, Willie's a lot like Wolverine in Old Man Logan, the comic book series, where he's like, yo, I'm going to pop these claws. And he never pops the claws.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. The thing about Willie, which bothers comparison. No, the thing that bothers me, just to go keep going with the comparison that Pete clearly loves, is that he doesn't have claws. Like, if he tried to pop him, he'd be like, here they come, and then his bones would fall out. Like, he has nothing to back up what's going on. And right now, to me, this is nothing against the actor. Willie, to me, feels like the phantom limb of the show. He's just totally unnecessary.
All right. Now, did it bother, did that gas station scene bother either of you two? Because that was driving me insane.
Okay, what was the incredibly specific thing about the gas station scene that bothered you?
The price of gas. That's not how much unleaded costs.
No, it was the fact that, okay, clearly this guy at the gas station needed help, and he just drove away. Not only did he turn his back on his friends, but he also turned his back on that family at the gas station who clearly needed help. I was hoping maybe having his lady there, she might be like, hey, aren't you going to do anything? No, he just cold as ice, drove off.
Well, he can't. He's scared. I mean, I guess because I see the point. Like, he does seem like he's just in a totally different show. The Pacifist Hour existing alongside like this crazy violent show. But I gotta hope it's gonna lead to something, and he's gonna come back and help his friends in this great battle that they're setting up for next episode. Because otherwise, then truly, like, why have we been watching it?
Yeah, but I thought that would be the thing. Like, he would save those people at the gas station. It would give him the confidence. And then he could turn around and realize what a fucking jackass he's being.
Well, it's not that he's being a jackass.
People die at the gas station.
They were being robbed.
You don't know. That could have escalated. You don't know what was going to happen.
Well, it's a big assumption to say, like, those people died because of him.
If you lose any amount of money, you die. That's how human beings work.
That's exactly true, when you're living on a tight budget. He did have a good line talking to Saya where he said, Peter Pan can't be a pirate. And I think that was a
that
description.
That didn't make any sense to me.
Well, here's what my take. There are two takes.
Why would
Peter
Pan want to be a pirate? He fights pirates. That doesn't make any sense.
I feel like, and this is just as a fan and listener of the podcast, I think Justin's about to explain this.
Yeah. Alex, thank you for your fandom. Because, you know, a lot of people make podcasts, but not everybody who does is also a fan of the same podcast.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me on, by the way.
You bet. It's a pleasure to have you here. But honestly, like, pick up this pace a little bit. No, what I took that as, Peter Pan can't be a pirate. He's talking about Marcus, and that Marcus is a good kid who's done a lot of bad things and been in bad situations. But that doesn't make him a monster, the monster that everybody sort of wants him to be. But I think the flip side of that is Peter Pan can't be a pirate. Willie can't be a pirate either, because he's Peter Pan as well.
Hmm. In a way, aren't they all Peter Pan trying to be the Lost Boys, trying not to grow up, but being forced into a situation where they have to?
Exactly. And they just end up at a comic book store called Lost Innocence.
Yeah, but you can't drive away from your fucking problems. At some point, you got to, like Marcus said, I think it was Marcus, you can't just watch things happen. You got to eventually fucking participate. And it's just as bad not doing anything, you know. I was sticking up for Willie this whole time, and this episode just made me so mad. I hope that guy dies off screen and I never have to see him again, if that's the way he's going to be.
Well, no, that's horrible, Pete.
He's definitely, to Justin's point, he's definitely going to hand solo himself by the end of next episode. And frankly, probably die in the process. So there you go. So everybody wins.
Yeah, right?
We don't. The viewers don't.
No. Well, you want him to die, Pete, and you want to see him step up, Justin, so everybody wins. There you go.
That's right. I want to talk about the musical number. There were a lot of music was a popular thing, a big thing in this episode. As in the whole series, I think Rick Remender makes that a priority. We get this fun, fucked up musical number at the top with Fuckface and his
His banjo,
his sort of
and then
lost
gets
voice.
A solo. That was really entertaining and really fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I feel like Fuckface is the most entertaining part of this show right now. I'd almost want to watch his dark hillbilly shenanigans after he kills off everybody else on the show.
Yeah,
that's really dark, man. That's really dark.
Yeah, that's fucked up. I guess you're not a fan of Mr. Shabnon, because he goes down in a horrifying way.
Yeah, well, you know, he deserved it.
Oh, wow.
Really trying to run for his life, he deserved to die?
Yeah, I don't understand. Like, I sort of understand, given they talk about, okay, the whole place is booby-trapped, we got to be really careful going in, etc. But they decide to do this assault. I just feel like everything that we've seen about these kids, they are the most elite fighting force possible. And everybody, including Fuckface, is basically like their weapons are what? That they have a lot of guns, maybe, or something like that. Like, they have not shown me that they are a physical match yet for even Marcus, let alone adding in Saya and Maria and Billy and everybody else. These are people who train to kill people, you know, they're teen assassins. So I haven't been totally sold on why they don't just go in, kill Fuckface, move on with their lives.
Well, because he's also reckless. He'll do anything.
Yeah, but that was also what was upsetting is they were like, oh, man, we really need Saya. And it's like, do you? You have Maria. She's a badass. You are all supposed to be badasses. It's one guy and a bunch of hillbillies. You should be able to handle that without her.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's supposed to pass 10th grade social studies, but people fail.
Fair enough. Can we talk about the comic book store scene? Because this is a scene pretty much straight out of the comic. It's one of the more iconic scenes from the comic.
Interesting.
Hold on. Let's sort of build up to it because yeah. I want to talk. The thing that gets him there is pretty wild. So Maria's like, I'm having a tough time. Stay with me. Marcus is like, sure. Totally ditches to go to the punk show
because dude loves to mosh. And he like opened up the door, and there was a moment where like, okay, I'm gonna go in, but then sees that she's kind of drinking by herself, hanging on by thin thread, and then is like, all right, well, fuck this, I'm gonna go have fun. I don't want to deal with whatever that is.
I mean, I guess
that wasn't cool.
Yeah, no, it wasn't cool, and Marcus is not being that cool this episode.
Yeah, he also had an opportunity later. He could have just, okay, here's the plan, here's the keys, cool. And then he could have gone back to Maria, and again he chose not to.
Well, first off, he loves the mosh pit. No.
Well, he doesn't initially, but like I like that sequence. Like they're going to see the Adolescents, which is a real band, singing Kids of the Black Hole, which is a real song, which was a little weird to me because I feel like we've been a little off reality most of the time with the show. But to bring that in and have a band pretending to be the real Adolescents and have them talk about like they're the best, they're amazing, this is so cool. But then it not actually be the Adolescents, I think, was a little strange. I like that sequence because Marcus has been so careful, and we've seen so many times him trying to fit in, and that Saya teaches him how to finally be free and to get out of his head in the mosh pit. I thought that was neat. It was also a good explanation of mosh pits, something that, frankly, I've never really gotten.
Yeah, well, how often do you find yourself in the pit? Alex, Pete?
Me? Great question, Justin. I would say at least once a week, if not twice a week. I really love to mosh my brains out.
Yeah. Well, the F train on a weekday morning is not technically a mosh pit. Pete, are you?
There's a lot of adolescence there.
True. That's true. That's fair.
You ride on
the kids' train?
Yeah.
I went through a pretty metal phase, and I pitted it up a bunch.
Yeah.
I was happy to see the way they talked about moshing. I think that's very true, and I think they did a great job of shedding a light on how it's supportive and fun it is.
The positive side of moshing.
Yeah.
That's where you don't have to worry about the getting hit with a bottle.
The only moshing I do is mashing a potato for my mashed potatoes at dinner.
That's, you know, that, and that's like sort of intense, too. There's a give and take there.
Yeah, exactly. I'm giving the potatoes a swoosh.
Not a mosh pit guy. I would crowd surf. I'm down with that. That seems more fun. I've just never been that.
So you're above the pit. You can't get in with the people and mosh around is what you're saying.
Yeah, I'm an elitist when it comes to that shit. No, I want to avoid the pit altogether because that's where you fall on the ground if you're crowd surfing.
So they go, they enjoy the mosh pit.
Hold on a second. I will not be called out for operating above the pit.
Why? You're operating above the pith. Like, that's totally in line with your character.
Thank you for saying character.
Yes. So then they go out into the alley and they start making out. And Saya and Marcus end up sleeping together. We get a very psychedelic sleeping montage the next day when Marcus wakes up next to her, realizes he's late to open up the comic book shop. He's running completely hungover.
The explosives are going to be delivered.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's that night really got away from him.
Yes.
It was noon when he woke up. Imagine sleeping outside and not waking up till noon.
Oh, my God.
You got to be really wasted to do that.
You'd be so dewy. You'd be so covered in dew.
Yeah. Alex cuts right to the core of the real issue. Dew.
Yeah. I can't believe we all aren't really used to mosh pits, given how we're like, oh, sleeping outside until noon? No thanks.
Yeah, Alex can't handle the dew pit.
Yeah.
You guys have never passed out outside. Never.
I'll tell you.
No, I have.
I don't. No thanks for the dew pit.
Noon.
But thank you for the avocado pit that you put in the center of your mashed avocado to keep that guacamole really fresh.
Are you doing another show, Alex? I can't tell who you're
talking to. Sorry. Cooking show?
I have a half Harry Potter, half cooking podcast that I just figured I'd like work in some stuff to kind of cut down on time.
Just folded it in. Try to just mosh it into this one. Well, it doesn't work.
Similar to how I like to fold in a little cheddar cheese into my mashed potatoes.
If you could try not to work on bits for other podcasts so you're going to start without us, that'd be great.
So Marcus has this psychedelic montage as he's trying to remember the previous night. Loved how that was put together. I think that was so much fun. And then he gets to the comic book shop, checks the explosives. They're there. It's fine. And then he's tending to the comic book shop. Question for you guys, because in the comic, it's established that he works at a comic book shop with, if I remember correctly, Billy, pretty early on and throughout. But I don't remember them establishing that he actually had to work the comic book shop at any point.
Like, since when do you open a comic book shop and run a comic book shop?
Yeah. Did we miss something? Was there something?
No, I don't think so. But I didn't mind it. I liked that it was just sort of like, here it is.
It was so weird to me because there'd been no establishment of it when he'd been working at a comic book shop before in the show. Yeah. Like, it felt like it was there because it happened in the comic and you needed to set up the shitting montage. And that was pretty much it. What did you guys think about that?
It was also super weird because he's supposed to be going to assassin school first full time and it's Christmas break and like, is he covering for somebody? At no point is he ever mentioned, like, they meet at the comic book shop, but that's a normal meeting place. But then all of a sudden, he's in charge of, like, opening it up. And, oh, by the way, this comic book shop has tons and tons of kids. That's not
tons
a comic
and tons
shop.
Of kids. And at some point, Marcus had promised to draw them a bunch of stuff.
But keep
also
in mind, this is the 80s, so it's not like now.
Oh, right. Back in those times, things happened for no reason.
I got to say also, it's very telling that you guys are complaining so hard about the comic book stuff and less about the dude that crazy shits his pants.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting to that. We're getting to that. Yeah. But, I mean, I was a little kid in the comic book shop in the 80s, but, like, you know, there wasn't a lot of other kids there. I was just surprised. Like, I was like, what is there, some event with Paw Patrol happening where, like, there's a bunch of kids there? Like, I was
Paw Patrol?
I don't know. I was just trying to think of, like, why there were so many little kids there at a comic book shop. It seemed weird to me.
That was something that I personally did not have too much of a problem with. What did you think about the sharding, though?
You never trust a fart, guys, especially when you're, you know, wake up like that. I mean, that's common knowledge.
We've all been there. We've all been in that exact situation and done that exact thing.
Well, I've never was going to fart on the little kid, but I've definitely should have. I mean, that was fucked up that he was just going to fart on this little kid.
Yeah. And it's a pretty gross sequence. Then he has to clean off all of his clothes. Everybody comes in on him and finds it very, very funny. Again, I feel like it was set up and played out a little better in the comic because it's set up that he works at the comic book shop, it's something that layered throughout. I think the way that Wes Craig drew that sequence in the comic, it just, you can feel it literally like building and building and building and building over the course of the issue until it comes out in the most horrific way possible. So this was fine. It was fine. It just felt like a little gross out humor in the middle versus this big event that it was.
Yeah. I mean, I think they definitely could have set up a little bit more the running and the him feeling the buildup or just like feeling gross, because he talked a little bit about it, but it felt like he was
puking on his way over there. You know, I mean, he definitely wasn't feeling good. And then he like ate some random dude's burrito off the street. I mean, that was.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah. Street burrito. That's a definite diarrhea attack. He made a lot of real...
On my other podcast, I know I keep bringing this up, but we say street burrito, that ain't neato.
Yeah.
Every episode.
He hit, like, all the marks in diarrhea bingo, and he paid a price for it at the end. But I do like Billy, sure, later in the episode, talks up the connection between diarrhea and greatness, which I respect.
Yeah, me too. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Other moments that you guys wanted to call out, what about the fight with Master Lin and Madame Gao and Victor and Brandy Lin is her name.
Oh, nice. All right, well, we need to... Yeah. Okay, there's a lot to talk about in this episode. But what bothered me was Master Lin just said to Saya, like, hey, here's an address. Go guard this house. Like, you need to tell her what's going on, man, so she knows how serious this is.
She would have ditched anyway, though.
No. Yes. Don't you dare say that.
She had to ditch to go with her friends.
No. If he would have said, listen, I'm in trouble, and I need you to guard my secret family, she would have never left her post.
No, she definitely would have. It's like, that was like homework to her, and she was like, I'm going to skip my homework tonight because I want to go hang out with my friends.
No, dude. If you're talking about somebody's family, she wouldn't have left.
I mean, I'm just saying, she killed a member of her family for her friends, so I think she's really in with these friends.
Yeah, I do think that she's very close with her friends, but I think if Master Lin would have explained things, she wouldn't have left her post.
I don't think so. I loved the way this episode was shot. There's a ton of cool, interesting shots at the punk club when they're coming down the side of the building. It was really cool. I love the human table that Mrs. Gao has. That's, man, that's hard. Especially if you're trying to put together a puzzle or something.
I love that. I love that they set up that weird room with human tables and shelves and everything a couple of episodes back. And then when it comes down to it, they just all pull out weapons and go to work. That was great. Like,
that
to your
fight
point,
sequence was really awesome.
Well staged. I did love seeing Victor and Brandy Lin turn around and attack her. Yeah. Everything about that was great. And then the final sequence, the final fight in Master Lin's home, where Diablo ends up killing his wife. Very sad.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, agreed. Let me ask you a question. Where was Madame Gao? Why, when she ran away, didn't she run right to the house? Or do you think she did and saw Chico's dad there and backed up?
I think she ran away and she's going to come back later.
Yeah.
You think she just ran away?
Well, if they're doing it right, everything is going to come crashing together all at the end. Like, you're going to have Madame Gao, Fuckface, Diablo, all of the students, everybody in King's Dominion all at the same time in some cacophony of violence. That's certainly the way I would like to see it end, and I think that's the reasonable way for the show to end at this point.
Nice. Spoiler, Alex. Man,
I really liked Master Lin's wife. And that was really heartbreaking to watch. Like, she's a straight up badass, man. That was so cool. The way, like, she just started attacking and, like, it was just fantastic.
Great shot as well. Very well filmed.
Also, when you yell to your kid to run, you can't just stand there, kid. You gotta fucking run.
Wow, you're blaming the kid for not running?
Yeah.
Where's she gonna go? She doesn't have her family's in the house.
Get out of the house, man. Your dad, your mom tells you to run. There's a fucking shit going down, and you stand there like some little asshole.
Wow.
I don't know. I think that's hard, Pete. I don't have any other comment on it other than I feel like that might actually realistically be hard.
Sure, it's hard.
Yeah, Pete's mad at Willie. Pete's mad at the daughter.
If I told you to run, Pete, like if I was like, get the fuck out of here, Pete, you got to run. Would you do it?
Yep.
Yes? Was that a yes?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
All right. Kind of, good to know. All right.
Fine. Dude, if there was, and this is, again, if I'm your child, and if you're attacking somebody and you say run, I'm going to run. You're the person I trust most in this world. You tell me to do something.
Pete, then, is that true?
No, you asshole. I'm talking about if you were, I'm your kid.
All right.
Oh, sure.
Pete, you're right. We should finally file those papers and legally adopt you. It's been too long. And you're honest, frankly, you're out of control.
Yeah.
But the mom sacrifices her. Like when she stood up, I was like, no. Oh, so amazing.
Yeah.
Any other moments on this episode you guys want to call out before we start wrapping this up?
No, I thought this was a great episode. This show is really built nicely. It's been, especially for like Rick Remender, this is first like major TV job to have it just really, and he had such a big role in it, to have it come together this way was really impressive.
I would like to talk about Master Lin. First off, we got an amazing animated kind of backstory here with Master Lin, which was really cool. Powerful. Also, when he was teaching class, that moment where he says...
Sorry, deadly class, when he was teaching deadly class.
Yeah, when he was teaching deadly class, he has this moment where he's talking to his class, and he was like, if you love someone enough to die for them, you truly will. And it just, like, hangs on it. It was so awesome. That actor is killing the show.
But honestly, that's like a line that a teacher has, like... early on, they just use it every year because it's like a cool line to say.
Don't undercut the power of that fucking moment, dude. That was fucking beautiful.
No, yeah, it's like a teacher coming in and being like, one of you could be on the Supreme Court someday. It's like, you say that every year.
Dude, how about the part where like the animation, it like ends on his animated face and then cuts to his real life face? Oh, that was really amazing.
I just want to get back to the Supreme Court thing because one of my teachers said that, and it was actually true.
Yeah, you went with Brett Kavanaugh, right?
Yeah, Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah, you were squee, weren't you?
Yeah, I was squee. We got real fucked up.
I love beer.
I'd like to say, though, overall, this episode was very upsetting because we had a lot of characters making wrong choices. You know, Marcus... you know, if you like Saya, that's cool, but you have a girlfriend, you have a responsibility.
Yeah.
You can't leave Maria like that. That's fucking bullshit, man.
Yeah, I also got to shout out the diarrhea made a bad choice by showing up then.
And also, Willie, there is like a cheaper gas station right across the street.
Exactly. You
those prices were out of control.
Too high.
As we end every episode, let's do superlatives, you guys. Everybody loves this. This is everybody's favorite part. We're well prepared for it. I'll start off. I would say most likely for me to forget her name would be Brandy Lynn. That's my superlative for the episode.
That's allowed.
Justin, you got one?
Superlative. Let's see. I think most likely to grow up to be... one of us is that kid who demands Marcus draw him a picture.
That was actually time traveling baby Pete.
Yeah. Baby Pete, baby Pete, baby Pete.
Yeah. Well, if that was really me, that kid would have had a lot thicker glasses, man.
Well, that's the only difference.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was an annoying little kid. Surprise, surprise. Most likely to be a coward, Willie. Most likely to not give his student enough information, Master Lin.
These are just your opinions.
Most likely to be a fucking asshole when he should have stood up as Marcus. It's just awful, man. It was really upsetting this episode. It made me so mad.
I'm so sorry. Well, we've got one more episode left of Deadly Class and one more episode of our Deadly Cast podcast, so tune in for that. It'll be up a couple of weeks from now, probably.
No, we're going
to
do it.
No, we will actually try to put it up on time.
I can't wait for this next episode.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how it all comes together. If you'd like to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York. Come on by and we'll kill you. Pete, what do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast. Also, my Harry Potter podcast and my cooking podcast, which are the same podcast. And we'll see you in the mosh pit.
One of you, I'm honest right now, could be on the Supreme Court.